Shall we talk about Spinal Tap?
Yes, please. That sounds lovely. I'm Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane. And welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast! It's on. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. Getting over my illness. I'm all good.
A little scratchy.
But it sounds good though, doesn't it?
It sounds manly. Pubescent.
Yeah. Sounds like I've got some sort of hormones flowing through me. You know what I mean? Sounds like I've got some testosterone.
Yeah, and some acne.
Yeah. Like, bacne.
Bacne. Yeah. There we go.
There you go.
Baby got bacne.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. From the bacne to the walls.
Bacne in black.
In it.
Back in Blackney.
There you go. Back in Blackney. We missed that.
No, Blackney's different. We've gone from Blackney to Blackney.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's metastasized. Yeah. Anyway, you're good, but you're getting better from
doing
being
good.
Ill.
Yeah, I'm doing good. Busy at work, but I'm loving life.
Yeah.
How are you?
Exactly the same.
Good
Ill,
stuff.
Busy at work. We had a listener get in touch recently and ask where the long how are yous have gone.
Yeah.
We still do them. They're just on Patreon.
And
It's a quid.
We keep saying this. It's not a quid. It's quid 50.
It's a quid 50. It's a quid 50.
It's 2 quid if you're on Apple.
It's less than half a coffee.
It is.
And it just gives us a little bit of privacy. Like, I was at a place in my life where I wanted to share every little detail.
Yeah.
And now I'm at a place in my life where I'm a little bit better and I want a little bit of privacy.
Stop doing that.
You love that voice. It's your favorite voice. Every time I do it, you're excited about it.
No, I hate it because it makes me think of that dude on TikTok. This was like, hey, whoa, princess.
Yeah.
But the worst thing is you're not a thousand miles removed from that.
How dare you?
That's what's upsetting. What's upsetting.
Should we talk about what we're getting into today?
Yeah, of course.
Look, we're going to get into
the birth of all of our favorite comedies.
The truth behind the musical curtain.
The legacy of a director gone too soon from life and not soon enough from the art form.
And as many drummer jokes as I can fit into one episode, because I know they're your favorite kind of joke. You were a drummer. You were in a band. Many bands.
I am a drummer.
I've not heard you drum in a long time and it breaks my heart.
Yeah, but were makes it seem permanent. So A, fuck you very much. B, I'll get back to it.
Okay.
I've still got my
kit. Before you get on that moral high horse, do you remember there was a time where you got crystals in your ear and you looked me in the eye and you said, I've got crystals in my ear and I can't drum. And I listened to that and I heard that because you tried to drum and the crystals in your ear would make you feel violently sick. And we had a whole discussion about how sad you were that you wouldn't be able to drum again.
Yeah.
And so now when I've internalized that, you're like, oh, actually...
Yeah, but in all fairness, when the weird crystals in my inner ear went and I kept getting vertigo for no fucking reason, every time I would listen to music, it made me want to kill myself.
Right.
So I was like...
So that's why I past tensed it. Don't get on your
this
upset.
This is years ago.
Yes.
Well, we've spoken about this since then.
It's forgotten.
You're like every ex I've ever had. Do you remember that one time 8 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah, it's called...
Maybe this is why I love you. You know what I mean? Maybe this is why this works. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
So allow me to rephrase. You're a drummer. You've been in multiple bands. I was in the music industry for a little bit. I never mentioned it. It's very much a secret.
Honestly, I forgot.
That's right. I mean, I forget everything I ever say. So I think this film, Spinal Tap, has got some home truths.
Yeah.
And I'd like to get into some of the things that are in the film that are true. Some of the things the film missed out.
I like this. This is one of those films that I saw when I was too young to know what a mockumentary was.
Right.
So I remember watching this real young, and I think it was my brother. I can't fully remember if I'm being entirely honest, but my brother was big into music. He's the one that introduced me to like Nirvana when I was, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old, and started the obsession with Dave Grohl. He also introduced me to U2, which began a lifelong hatred of Bono.
Mm.
So, you know what I mean? It swings and roundabouts, but I thank him for both because I live and die by both still, some 3 decades later. So I think I watched it with my brother. I didn't realize it was a mockumentary, and it was just in my mind, in my childhood, in my childlike brain, it was four people who were
real
and
the
coolest fucking people that have existed ever because they'd done it. They saw a dream and they were like, you know what, I'm going to fucking do it.
And the fact they were idiots, he was kind of
the
proof
fact
of...
that they were idiots. I was like, who needs university?
Right.
Who needs a degree? Look at these guys.
Yeah. And you
lived
by that.
That thinks his
degree.
Fucking ribs are green because his veins are blue. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's fucking genius.
So I was introduced to this by my sister's dad, who was like, it's the funniest film of all time.
Okay.
And I
That's
watched
a bold
it.
Statement.
I watched it and I violently disagreed.
Okay.
It made me smirk at best.
Really?
It was fine. It was it was like, yeah, 80s bands,
The folding sandwich bit didn't...
Yeah, like there's universal bit. Like there's funny moments on a first watch.
Yeah.
There's funny moments. But when something's when somebody told you it's the funniest film of all time.
Right.
And you watch it, you're like, okay, yeah, this is good.
Yeah, it's a bold statement. Yeah, yeah, right. I get you. I get you.
Every time I rewatched it, because it was always on, it would just crop up. Especially in my career, it would crop up. And it would get referenced and it would somehow kind of become, with repeat applications, just funnier and funnier. And funnier as I think I saw it become truer and truer and truer.
Right, okay.
And what I didn't realize until researching this episode is it's actually quite an influential film.
Okay.
Like, surprisingly.
Okay.
So, okay, we'll start with just the simple one. There's a scene in this movie where Nigel Tufnell, guitarist, is showing the director, played by Rob Reiner, around his guitar collection, and he goes up to the amp.
Oh,
and he goes, this one,
fucking hell, yeah.
Right, turns, goes up to 11.
This one goes up to 11.
Right. Played out joke.
Yeah.
It's the famous joke from the film.
Yeah.
And everyone always talks about it like it's the funniest thing. And it was one of those moments where, like, my sister's dad wasn't watching the TV. He was staring at the side of my head to see how funny I found it.
Yeah, I love doing that to
and
people.
And I was just like,
I love doing that to people so much.
It's my least favorite thing, right? It's a good joke, but it's not.
It's a great joke.
It's overplayed. I didn't realise this. The phrase turn it up to 11 didn't exist before this film.
Okay.
This was the coining of that phrase.
Yeah.
So I had no idea. I thought it was just like, okay, they've taken the phrase turn it up to 11.
Yeah.
And they've made an amp and they're okay, this one goes up to 11. There wasn't the concept of that beforehand. That whole how do we take this up to 11 in 1983 before Spinal Tap came out was not a phrase.
No,
that has entered the social dictionary because of this film. There's a load of things in this film that didn't exist before Spinal Tap did it. Arguably, mockumentary as a genre didn't exist before this film.
Yeah.
And arguably, improv comedy as the main means of writing a film was not popular until Spinal Tap proved you could do it.
Okay.
So there's a couple of examples of like mock documentary improv.
Sure.
The Swiss Spaghetti Harvest in 1957,
which
was a BBC News report on Panorama, of all places, where they did an April Fool's episode where they had loads of cooked spaghetti in trees. And they were saying, oh, it's time for the Italian spaghetti harvest. And it was a kind of early short form that tricked viewers into thinking it was a real documentary.
Even back then.
Even
in the 50s.
Yeah.
British people are still being shithouses.
Yeah, yeah.
Just for the sake of being shithouses.
Right. And then there's a couple of,
it's always at the Italians' expense as well. Do you know
1,000%, because they're so proud.
If we walk down a street in England and go, where's my pasta? Everyone's like, oh, doing an Italian?
Yep.
Do that in a Chinese accent as you're walking down the street. Do you know what I mean?
I'd rather not.
It's a different...
It's a bit diehard.
It's a different thing.
It is a different thing.
It's a different thing, man.
So there's a couple of influential filmmakers in improv.
Sorry, I was thinking about you walking down the street doing a Chinese accent.
Fuck's sakes. There's a couple of influential filmmakers in improv.
Yeah.
This is based on research. Because have you seen any John Cassavetes films?
I know the name.
Right, so do I. Do you know the film Woman Under the Influence?
No.
I see. I've heard about it three times this week. Just in my travels. Okay. Didn't realize it was directed by John Cassavetes.
Okay.
If that's even how it's pronounced. He also did a film called Faces. Apparently, incredibly influential and incredibly important film director. Not seen a single one of his films. I know I should have done.
I know his name from somewhere.
Cassavetes.
Husbands. It's in the Criterion Collection.
Okay.
And I've been flirting with the Blu-ray in HMV for about 6 months.
Okay. Have you seen it?
No, but no, I'm desperate to.
This is it. I'm He's one of those to. Guys, like, and I'm sure when we talk about directors from the 80s to people my sister's age who are like in their early 20s, they probably also go, Stanley Kubrick. Right.
That's really upsetting.
But that's where we're at, dude. Like,
yeah, but I violently hate that.
Yeah. And there will be people who know John Cassavetes being like, how do these two not know who he is? How have they not seen Woman Under the Influence?
I've not seen Woman Under the Influence.
It's just the passage of time.
Husbands. I'm getting husbands. This is the conversation that sold me on
there
husbands.
There you go.
Next time I'm in HMV, boom, Criterion collection.
Anyway, I bring him up because he encouraged actors to explore scenes freely. So the dialogue was kind of a guide.
Yeah.
But he was doing it because he wanted natural delivery.
Yeah.
And he wanted a sort of emotional truth to the scene. It wasn't a comedic thing. It was very much a serious, we are making a film about this. Inhabit your roles.
Yeah.
And then let the roles speak.
Okay.
Comedy, you're looking for more like Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
Which was much more of an improvisational thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But the comedy is much more of like a theatrical, everyone's knowingly funny. It's much more of that kind of SNL.
Yeah, it's everyone very much involved, on the nose.
It's on the nose.
Someone walks on a stage and it's like they're physically announcing, I'm about to be a funny man.
Right. And the characters know they're in a comedy.
Yeah.
They're very much knowingly comedic. Spinal Tap is by merging the mockumentary element and playing it completely straight, deadpan, are kind of the foundation of all of the sitcom comedy that's based in that documentary format. The Office.
Yeah.
Basically anything that Ricky Gervais touches for the first 10 years of his career. Parks and Rec.
Derek. Was one of his things. You know what I mean? Parks and Rec's a big one.
Parks and Rec's a huge one.
Yeah.
Which I think is very much kind of tied to the style of this movie.
Yeah.
It's a hugely influential film. And I kind of thought, oh, well, you know, writing your script via improv was a thing that had been done for ages. No, this was one of the first films that they didn't script anything, really. They didn't even really script a plot. They just went, we'll have some places and we'll have some rough ideas of things that could happen. And we'll just write the film in front of the camera. To the degree where they had to introduce the character of the lead singer's girlfriend, St. Hubbin's girlfriend, because the distributor was like, well, what's the plot?
The plot's amazing in this film.
The plot's amazing.
The plot's incredible.
But it's so subtle. It's not really a plot film. It's not.
But that's the point of it. That's what makes it
Nothing
so good.
Nothing happens.
Though. Nothing is happening apart from aged rockers are dwindling and their tour around the US is going badly.
Yeah.
It's going from bad to worse to worse to worse to worse. They're trying to release their album. There's an issue with the cover because it's deemed sexist. It's called Smell the Glove. And it's a woman on a dog collar and chain being forced to smell a glove.
Which we never see. It's only ever described.
No, you never see it. But it is objectively a funny cover because they're doing the whole hair metal thing. And that was kind of the objectification that was happening around that time in the 80s of like all these hair metal bands. I mean, Steel Panther do a great fucking like parody of it.
100%.
And it works perfect.
It works perfect.
Yeah.
But it, again, even Steel Panther are such a Spinal Tap descendant.
Yeah, they are Spinal Tap.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That, I've got a section, because so much of this film is true.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to get into, I was going to talk about the movies that this influenced, but...
I'm down for that. That sounds great.
40-year-old Virgin knocked up Superbad. Like,
yeah, incredible.
On, improv comedy. Yeah. All the Judd Apatow school kind of has a direct lineage from Spinal Tap. But because you mentioned the Steel Panther and the cover thing, I realized the other day when I was working for Chasing Status, they got an album called Brand New Machine.
Yeah.
The first one I did with them.
Yeah.
And I remember the moment where they brought in the CD and they were like, what do you think of the cover? And I went, what is it?
Right.
And they went, it's a hollow point bullet with a smiley face on it. And I went, oh, I thought it's a champagne cork. And all four of them, well, Will, Saul, manager, and the MC went, oh, yeah.
Right.
And to this day, I look at that cover and I go, that's a fucking champagne cork.
I need to see this.
The red one. The red album.
What's it called?
It's called Brand New Machine, Chasing Status. It was supposed to be their big evolution after the album with all the hits on it.
That is a champagne cork.
That's a champagne. It's not. It's a hollow point bullet. But the moment that happened,
That's a champagne cork.
Yeah, I know.
That's not.
The moment that happened.
Right.
The first movie that came to mind.
Yeah.
Spinal Tap.
Oh,
that moment when they open it and the cover's all black
and
they all start disagreeing because it's just what the cover is now because it's been printed on a couple of 100,000 bits of physical media.
Okay, this hit me differently today because I watched it again this morning just for shits and giggles. The black The complete Black album is hilarious because they crack a joke about the Beatles' White album.
Yep.
But it's completely, it's not even a joke.
No.
It's where the host of a party is like, why does a, you know, the really thick, like New York Jewish accent.
I do, yeah.
Where she's
based on a real woman, by the way.
Yeah, it's amazing. she kind of sounds like...
Darling, come over here!
Lois from Family Guy.
It almost direct lineage.
Yeah. So she's literally stood in the party and she's like, well, Kmart aren't selling it and Sears aren't going to sell it because it's too offensive. And it's like, but that's what rock and roll is. It's supposed to be sort of like provocative and it's just that. And she's like, the fucking White Album? The White Album? That's not sexy. It's just white.
You're right.
And it was just a throwaway thing of this person getting pissed off talking about this thing. And then and when the album is all black, I was like...
He's literally just taken that bit from the cover.
That's fucking amazing.
He's literally overheard that bit of comment and gone, I guess this will do that.
Fine, we'll do that, but not white.
Just black.
Yeah. But also then at the very end when he's talking about what are the jobs he would do in a little interview.
Yeah.
And he's like, I reckon I could be sort of like maybe working in a shop somewhere for clothes. And then
what's like, or chapeau?
Oh, yeah. So what would... Oh, yeah. No, we haven't got that colour. Would you wear black? And I was like, if that would have been before the album, I would have lost my fucking mind. Before the big reveal of the artwork, I would have lost my mind.
So I wanted to get into all the things in this movie that were true.
Okay.
Peter Smokler was a camera operator.
Yeah.
He did the camera work on a documentary called Gimme Shelter about the Stones gig and Altamont.
Oh, yeah.
You seen it?
Yeah.
Basically, for those that haven't, the Stones got caught short, needed security, got the Hells Angels to do the security.
Yeah.
Fucking terrible idea.
Great idea. Are you being serious?
Well, I mean, a man was shot by a Hells Angel.
Don't be a dick.
Right, okay.
There's the lesson there.
Okay. So Ben's not seen the documentary.
Fucking around, come on. Come on.
But at one point, Peter Smokler turns to Rob Reiner and he goes, I don't get why this is a comedy. It's not different from what bands do in the documentaries I've worked on.
Yeah.
And he was 100% legitimate.
Yeah.
Here are some of the stories, right? Christopher Guest was shopping at Matt Umanov Guitars in Greenwich Village, Bleecker Street.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so annoyed at this next bit because it doesn't name the rocker. It just says a well-known British rocker entered the shop. He was wearing leather pants and there was a noticeable bulge in them. The rocker sat down, played a few guitars. When he stood to leave, it had migrated to his ankle. And that inspired the scene where Derek Smalls, the bass player, has got the cucumber wrapped in tinfoil in his trousers.
Why wrap it in tinfoil?
Just,
you get through an airport security. Just leave it as a cucumber. Do you know what I mean?
You might have needed it for lunch later.
Sure.
You know?
Keep it fresh. Who am I to judge?
But true story.
That's fucking incredible.
The scene in which Nigel Tufnell, the guitarist, is put off by a poorly arranged deli tray with the sandwiches you mentioned earlier.
Folding sandwich, yeah.
Do you know the inspiration for that?
No.
Van Halen's brown M&Ms.
Also mentioned in Wayne's World, right?
Right.
But they take the piss and say it's an Aussie story.
Right.
Yeah.
Aussie comes up in a minute. The brown M&Ms story, by the way, for listeners who don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Van Halen had a rider, and the rider is essentially you send it to all the venues you're going to play at. And there's two riders. There's a tech rider, which is everything that needs to be set up on stage and how it needs to be set up.
Yeah.
And there's a hospitality rider, which is when we get into the green room, this is the food we eat. Yeah. So if you've got a vegetarian or someone who's got a nut allergy.
Bjork's is amazing, by the way.
There's a website called The Smoking Gun, and they've got everyone's riders.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
It's so good.
Yeah.
The Van Halen story is that famously they wanted a bowl of M&Ms with no brown M&Ms in the bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was sort of taken on as this story of rock and roll excess. Do you know the reason they asked for the brown M&Ms taken out?
No.
It was so that when they got to the venue, they could walk into the green room, look at the bowl of M&Ms, and if there were brown ones in it, they knew they had to check the rider across the entire tech setup.
Oh.
It was a way of checking this venue. How carefully are they reading the rider?
How much effort are they putting in?
How much effort are they putting in? Because we've got some very specific stuff that we need set up on stage. And if it's not right, shit's going to go wrong.
That's such a cunty way of doing it.
Isn't it?
Because if I owned a venue and some cunt had sent through a massive tech rider, and I'm like, shit, this needs to be perfect. I'd be like, 17 guys, there you go. This needs to be bang on. Then I get a hospitality rider that says, take all of the brown M&Ms out. I'd be like, go fuck yourself. We're all busy on stage.
So
someone puts 7 bags of M&Ms in a bowl and fuck off.
So the reason is solid.
Right.
The execution is awful.
It's awful.
But then remember the kind of people we're talking about. It is Van Halen. They're not geniuses.
Yeah, but this is the stupidest way to go about it ever.
There's a scene in here where Nigel rubs a violin against his guitar during his solo.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember visceral pain.
Right.
The same dude. You can tell whose music taste was which way.
Right.
My sister's father playing me a Led Zeppelin DVD where Jimmy Page gets a violin bow out to do the rest of the solo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Taken directly from that Led Zeppelin performance.
Yeah, yeah.
But switching it to a violin is so much funnier.
It's amazing.
The moment where he stops, retunes the violin for a little bit, like just takes a second to just change a tune in on the violin and then continues with the same lemon sour face. Comedy perfection.
It's amazing. It is incredible.
Right, Stonehenge.
Stonehenge. I know that that's based on a real thing because I've seen it.
Right. That's based on a real monument called Stonehenge.
Yeah.
It's also based on a real gig.
Go on.
Here's where Ozzy comes back in.
Hey.
Right? Black Sabbath's idea to make a Stonehenge stage set for the Born Again tour.
Right.
Geezer Butler.
Sure.
Talks of the incident.
Yeah.
We had Sharon Osbourne's dad, Don Arden, managing us.
Hey.
He came up with the idea of having the stage set be Stonehenge.
Hey.
He wrote the dimensions down and gave it to our tour manager.
Right.
He wrote it down in meters, but he meant to write it down in feet.
Right.
The people who made it saw 15 meters instead of 15 feet.
Wow.
It was 45 foot high and it wouldn't fit on any stage anywhere. So we had to just leave it in the storage area. It cost a fortune to make, but there was not a building on earth it would fit into.
That's fucking incredible. That is incredible. That's such a good story to have as well. I would have been so pissed off. I would have just put the bricks. I would have laid them out in the standing area and been like, deal with it.
For some reason, because I've seen this film multiple times throughout my life.
Yeah.
And the moment where the exact same thing happens, but the wrong way, you know, they have the tiny Stonehenge comes down.
Yeah.
Fucking hilarious.
Yeah, great.
Knowing that the real story was, in fact, that it was too big to fit into a building.
Incredible.
Wildly funnier.
Yeah.
Wildly funnier.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Gene Simmons, you're a Kiss fan.
I fucking love Kiss. I've seen him. Right. I've been to their last two end of the line tours.
Their last two final shows.
Oh, no,
shows.
Sorry. I missed the last one. I went to the two previous final ever tours.
Right.
Yeah.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on you.
I've seen a 75-year-old man be thrown out on wires over a crowd of people twice. Worth it both times.
What you didn't see is that the Hello Cleveland scene.
Yeah.
Where Spinal Tap are walking through the building multiple times.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's Gene Simmons.
Fucking amazing. I can see that happening there.
They were on the fourth floor. Their dressing room was on the fourth floor.
Right.
They got ready for the gig, went down to the ground floor.
Couldn't find it.
Nothing.
Right.
Went up to the second floor. Nothing.
Right.
The entrance to the stage was on the third floor. They got there after they'd been introduced.
Fucking amazing. Amazing. I love that shit. Dude, Kiss was like a whole different kettle of fish, man. Kiss is the only gig that I've ever been to where there was enough room in the standing area. So all the seats were taken because obviously it's like
older fans, right?
All the seats were taken. So the standing area was sort of like, not sparse, but there was pockets.
Mm-hmm.
There was pockets of like space. And I remember they came out and they started playing Love Gun and it kicked in. And like I went with two of my mates at the time and they were like, you know, doing their own thing, just sort of like doing a little vibe and stuff. I was losing my fucking mind to Love Gun and I looked to my left. And at that moment, a complete stranger looked to his right and we just locked eyes across a pocket of space and went, pointed at each other. And before I knew it, he was on my shoulders and we were just fucking like screaming, Love God. The best fucking time of my life at that gig. It was amazing.
I've also got some personal experiences.
With Kiss?
No.
Oh.
Sadly not.
I'm still interested.
Of Spinal Tap-esque moments that have occurred. Okay. So, a popular drum and bass act.
Don't name them. It's fine.
I can't name them.
Yeah.
We're playing Tea in the Park.
Sure.
One of them was late.
Okay.
By a large amount.
Right.
Missed the flight.
Sure.
Not the ones you're thinking of.
Yeah, I think it is. Because you've told me this story before. It's fine.
Missed the flight by a large amount.
Got you.
Is in London, needs to be in Scotland. Sure. Is on stage in about 3-4 hours.
Sure.
Charters a helicopter, right?
Okay.
A helicopter
yeah.
d- does not get them there in time.
Right.
So they get, it's being televised.
Right.
So what they have to do is they have to get the tour manager,
right,
who's roughly the same build, to go on wearing one of his hoodies,
yeah,
miming playing.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So stage is set, music's playing,
yeah,
guitar is off laptop,
right,
but someone's miming.
Right, right, right.
Now, my late friend, his helicopter lands, he gets to the side of the stage, he sees this going on. It's on like song two.
Okay.
Rather than waiting,
yeah,
for the song to end,
yeah,
just walks in full view, visibly,
right,
across the wrong side of the stage.
Amazing.
Grabs the guitar off the guy,
yeah,
and just demonstrates to everybody that's not been him for the last 8 minutes.
Wow. I kind of love that. And to be honest, I'm a little bit pissed off that none of the bands I've ever been in have ever done that ever, because that's objectively hilarious. That's objectively hilarious. Can you imagine being three songs into a gig and people are like, these are all right, and then just someone walks on and is like, they've not been playing.
They've not been playing.
They've not been playing.
They've not been playing.
It's me.
I don't trust anything now.
I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm here now. We can carry on playing.
Yeah.
Or just don't mention it. Fucking, I know, it's not a great reference,
right?
Louis C.K.'s TV show did one visual gag,
right,
once, and it has lived with me ever since because it's fucking amazing. He's viewing an apartment with a friend in the TV show, and he looks out to the street, and there's a homeless man just stood on the street, and a blacked out sedan pulls up, drags this homeless man into the sedan, and then puts another homeless man who looks identical in the exact same place and screams off, and it's never spoken about. It just, he sees it happen and he goes, oh my God. And he turns around and he's like, so is this the bathroom? And then just carries on like normal. It's the stupidest joke. It's lived with me ever since.
Nice.
And
nice.
Then obviously the whole fucking air accident, you got caught in that masturbating accident.
Yeah. Yeah, not great.
Not
you
great
must
reference.
Have had some Spinal Tap moments in your career.
There's a few. There was one band that was in, we were supposed to go on stage second, but we got pushed to main support.
Mm-hmm.
So at that moment, our bassist decided to have a shower in what he thought was our shower, which turned out to be just a shower in a room where they had chosen to set everything up for every band. So he gets in a shower, draws the curtain, he's full ass naked. And the room fills up with people that are not us. And obviously, I'm the drummer, the guitarist and the vocalist is in the room as well. And we're both sitting there going, what is happening right now? And it turns out that, yeah, it was a room for the bands and their friend, like the, you know, like the guest list, like their friends and their family and stuff. And our bassist is bare ass naked. It's at a venue. He doesn't have a towel. The venue doesn't have towels.
What was he expecting? How was he going to dry?
He was going to shake himself off like a dog.
He's going to drip dry.
Yeah, he's going to shake himself off like a dog. Put his clothes back on, and then we'd go out on stage triumphant. It would be a funny little thing.
Right.
We used to do stupid stuff. I remember for one gig, like I used to play drums shirtless quite a lot.
Yep.
And before
basically all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then before this particular gig, the bass player wrote "I want your sister" in massive letters across my chest.
Nice.
With my chest and my stomach. Just, I want your sister.
Right.
And that was a funny thing, because none of this is ever explained to anyone. We just do stupid shit to make each other laugh all the time. Yeah. It was just going to be another one of them.
It's going to be another one of them. He's just getting on stage wet.
He had to get out of the shower full
oh
ass.
Oh my God.
Like literally bare naked, cupping his junk, pulled the curtain back and was like, why? Hello.
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 Hello, everyone.
Could you pass me my jeans, please? Which was great. And then we went out on stage to the obviously be like main support to the main act who had just seen our bassist walking around ass out, drip dry, trying to shake himself off like a dog. And then we had to go out and try and be serious and be like, yeah, we're a band.
We're cool.
We're a cool band.
We're expressing ourselves.
We didn't just have our asses out, shaking them off like a dog in front of the main band. Yeah, we're a cool band.
I was trying to think of like times in my life where Spinal Tap has kind of made sense. And unfortunately, most of what I worked with was hip-hop and drum and bass, and I didn't get as much rock in my career as I wanted.
Yeah.
The most hip-hop Spinal Tap moment was when there was a rapper, he was hotly tipped to sort of dominate. Everything was going right. This album was really, really anticipated.
Yeah.
And the engineer working on the album, he'd been working on it for, I think, 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
And they only came by the studio for 1 week.
Okay.
And firstly, they booked it from, they just did a lockout. So they were just in permanently.
Yeah.
They didn't turn up for the first 10 hours.
Amazing.
And then when they did, 60 people showed up.
Oh, yeah. Right? Okay.
It turned into the wildest of like horrible parties.
Yeah, I can imagine.
His missus was doing heroin, which was
sure
strong.
Like it's a bold move.
That's a bold move, well, right?
What are you doing today? What are you doing today, Babs? Oh, yeah. Well, my fellas.
Heroin.
My right? fellas recording at the studio, yeah. So I'm just going to go and shoot up a bunch of heroin by the mixing desk.
Whilst also, she just bought a French bulldog, which they both owned. They were like, this is our dog.
Right.
But the dog wasn't toilet trained. So I had
How
to grab.
Be?
I had to grab one of the. We had the hand dryers that were just towels.
Oh,
so I grabbed loads of those, and anytime I saw the dog shitting, I'd have to like roll it like a Ghostbusters trap, try and get it under the dog.
Oh my god!
Which never worked.
Yeah, why would it?
Meanwhile, they invited tattoo artists down.
Yeah,
and he started doing free tattoos, but only if they were face tattoos.
Oh, that's dope.
So I saw. That's sick. There was a dude getting a portion of McDonald's fries tattooed on his cheek.
Yeah.
His first ever tattoo.
Yeah, well, yeah, that sounds great.
Using the floor as ashtrays.
With what you love, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Using the floor as ashtrays, tattoo needles everywhere. It was like a fucking hepatitis wet dream.
Yeah.
And I was chatting with the engineer and I was like, God, this is a bit intense. He's like, this is every night. This has been every night for me.
No.
For the last year and a half. And I'm like, well, do you, at least, you know, it's a project you're passionate about. He's like, I fucking hate this music. This is my nightmare. This is the last thing in the world I wanted to ever work on.
Okay.
But this album's going to be huge. You know, Drake's featuring. We've got a Drake feature.
Yeah.
This is going to be massive. So the week they left, Octavian got charged with domestic battery and rape. And the album got pulled 24 hours before it was released.
Wow.
Wow. And that's... all of that stress meant nothing.
Damn. You were cleaning up dog shit and heroin sick for literally fuck all.
Yeah, yeah. I was doing that for 1 week. That poor fucker, that poor engineer, a year and a half of that.
That's too much.
Octavian came out at one point and he said, I'd like a coffee.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's so not my job anymore, but I'm a professional. So of course, you're the client. What coffee would you like? He's like, I don't know. I've not had one before. What coffee do people drink? And I went, maybe a latte. And he opened his wallet, which was 3 inches thick with paper,
right,
pulled out a 50 and said, will this be enough? And
I
asked it sincerely, like from a place of insecurity, like he didn't know and he didn't want to offend me. He was like, is this enough or will you need more?
And you looked him dead in the eye and went, no. that will cover an espresso. Lattes are £450 per cup.
If I'd been thinking, I would have done, but I've been up for 30 hours and I was trying to be a professional. I was like, that's plenty, mate.
That's plenty, mate.
I'll
don't
get
worry.
You
I'll give them a tip. Don't worry about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Fucking, do you know what? If I was walking around and my wallet was that fat and I didn't know how much a coffee costed,
right,
fair play, I'd probably be doing the same shit.
Right.
I'd put a McDonald's fries on my face, like go for it.
I think the thing that shocks me about Spinal Tap, the older the film gets, and now that I've been through, I've experienced it, is the film cost $2 million to make, and it earned less than $5 million at the box office.
Yeah.
Just a quick perspective check. Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo, made $6.7 million in the same year.
Okay.
The reason this failed is because, can you guess?
People didn't know it wasn't real.
People didn't know it wasn't real.
Is that actually it?
It's actually it. It arrived without marketing or a mass appeal of like studio comedies. Didn't
have
big stars. And its deadpan style confused audiences who were unsure if they were watching a real documentary or a parody. After the film opened, several people told Rob Reiner that they loved the film, but he should have chosen a more well-known band. And right, if I'd read that fact the first few times I watched it, I'd have been like, absolute nonsense.
Okay.
And I think for general audiences, I can see why they'd be confused. For anyone who knows the music industry a little bit, hilarious comedy.
Yeah, definitely.
For people who've been in it as long as, or were in it as long as we were, it is just back to being a documentary again.
I love like, it, man.
It is so fucking accurate.
Some of the stuff that we've had to do, or that I've had to do to get to a gig before. I bought a van at 10 p.m. at night.
Jesus Christ. On a
tiny little fucking drive around the block, right? I was like, it drives. I need a van. I need to be in London tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I need to get all the gear in the car tonight, right? So I buy the van at 10 p.m. I get in touch with the insurance company, get insured on the van by 11:30 p.m. I load the van on the other end of Telford at like quarter past midnight. I get in the van 1 a.m. and I drive home. 8 a.m. I have to be driving to London in the van with everyone's gear.
Yep.
So with my insurance that I've got with the fucking beaten up old van that I've just bought, I've got breakdown cover, right?
Right.
So anyway, I get onto the motorway just outside of Telford.
I remember this gig.
And the fucking end, you were at this gig.
Yeah.
And the engine blew.
Yes, it did.
Because it was held together. There was a hole in the engine that was plugged with tissue paper. That had been painted black. And I didn't realize this because I didn't fucking look that
under the
hard
hood. Yeah.
At 10 p.m.
No.
When I had to be insured by 11 p.m. So anyway, van breaks down immediately.
Yeah.
I phone the band who are already on their way to London. And I'm like, I don't think I'm going to make it.
With all the gear.
Because the van's dead. And they were like, well, we fucking need all the stuff there. And I'm like, I understand the issue.
Yes.
Believe me. Because I'm sat in it and I've paid through the arse to be here for it, right?
Yeah.
Because the van was like $2,000.
Yeah. Fucking hell.
So I found the guy that I bought the van off and I was like, why the fuck is the van not working? And he was like, oh yeah, did you top it with water? And I was like, yeah. And he went, where's it broken down? I was like, on the motorway. He was like, oh, you shouldn't have driven it that far. I'm like, I didn't say where on the motorway. I'm 11 minutes from your house. What do you mean I shouldn't have driven it this far? Anyway, this goes back and forth for a minute. And the be all end all was, well, sold a scene in it, mate. So, and then hung up and blocked my number. So that was fine.
Amazing.
Guy shows up with the breakdown. He's like, oh yeah, this ain't driving. What I'll do.
The engine block has a hole in it. Yeah. You can't fix that.
It's not happening. Yeah. So I'll drop you back off at home. And I was like, nah, I need to make it into London. And he was like, yeah, but you only get, this isn't like a delivery service. We don't drop you in London and pick you up and bring you home. And I was like, but can you get me to London? He was like, all right, so technically we can take you to one address. And I was like, brilliant. It's Camden.
Ace of hearts. And Ace of spades.
This guy's like, right, okay, so my cover stops at Milton Keynes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll load the van up. I'll organize someone to meet you at a service station
in
Milton Keynes. We'll swap the van over to their truck. They can take you to the outskirts of London, and then we'll have to swap it over to a different truck in like Watford to take you into central London, which I did. So my van gets dropped off on the side street in London, fully broken down, but all the shit's there. And this is because it's big. We were managed by like the guy who was editing Enemy magazine at the time.
Oh, this, okay, I got confused about the gigs. Okay. Yes, I was both gigs.
You were.
Yeah.
This was the big one where it was like the showcase thing.
Yes, I remember.
For the guys from the label, the same label as Def Havana.
Yes, those guys.
And it was like a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
So get there in the sweaty little basement. There's the guy from the Horrors who was there.
Yes.
He was DJing and hosting the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. The skinniest man that ever lived.
He's fucking terrible. His music choice was awful. I was trying to speak to him about music and it was like pulling fucking teeth. I was like, Jesus Christ. What are your influences? I really like The Used. I'm like, sure. The Horrors. Okay. So we play the gig. It goes amazing. We load the van back up and I have to sleep in the van in London. And then I have to pay a fucking, like a breaker truck to ferry me from London back to Telford. But I have to pay someone who's already in Telford to drive into London to pick me up to bring me back to Telford. So they arrive at 11 p.m. the following day after I have sat in a van for like 20 hours. I'm fucking fuming. I am genuinely fuming. And that's the story of how we got the offer for the record label that immediately got fucking sacked off because finding management.
Well,
that's a whole other story.
Finding a management was your singer emailing my girlfriend at the time and trying to bully her.
Sign the contract. You get 10%.
Yeah.
And she's like, I have bands.
That's the great start to a working relationship.
The worst thing is I made that introduction. And when I found out that he sent that email from your missus at the time, I was like, I am so unbelievably sorry. I found out that he sent the exact same email to the manager for At The Drive-In, who I met on the train.
Amazing.
Who had also said that he was very interested in doing the gig, but because he got an email from someone he's never met saying, just fucking sign the contract.
You get 10%.
I'm like, he looks after The Damned. Mm. He looks after At The Drive-In, the Mars Volta, the fucking bands that I grew up admiring, still admire to this day. And you've just emailed the guy in charge of them.
Yeah.
And gone, just fucking do it, bro.
The best thing is, as well, is he said 10%, which is half the industry standard.
Exactly. Right? Unbelievable. Guess who did the accounts for the band? Guess who didn't get paid at all? And guess who got asked to pay a quarter of the van that was bought before he joined the band when he was leaving? Fucking eat my whole arsehole.
So for a film shot in 1984, over 5 weeks.
Weirdly relatable.
On handheld 16mm cameras.
Weirdly relatable.
Exactly true.
Yeah.
It's a mockumentary that is so close to the truth. It's almost documentary.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear some drummer jokes?
Hit me with them.
What's the most common question drummers get at work?
I don't know.
Can I get a large latte, please?
Joke's on you.
Is it?
No.
No?
I served a latte like 3 days ago.
What do you call a beautiful girl on a drummer's arm?
I don't know.
A tattoo.
That's pretty funny.
Okay.
Because look at this tattoo. Okay, continue on.
How do you get a drummer off your porch?
I don't know.
Pay for the pizza.
Oh, I've been a pizza delivery guy in the past as well.
What's the difference between a drummer and a wine?
I don't know.
The wine will mature and make money.
Oh, that's true, because I'm wildly immature and actually broke. Yeah, sick.
What's the difference between a drummer and a pizza?
I don't know.
Pizza can feed a family of four.
That's a good one.
What do you call a drummer that breaks up with his girlfriend?
I don't know.
Homeless. What does a drummer use for contraception?
I don't know.
His instrument.
Yeah. Works like a charm every time. Every time.
Do you hear about the drummer who finished uni?
No.
No, me neither.
Yeah, same. Because I also dropped out of uni. I feel like I'm typecast and I don't like it. I feel like every decision I've made being sort of like, yeah, this is definitely right for me. And you've just turned them all into jokes. And I'm like, interesting. Interesting.
I don't know why. Like, having spent a lot of time around musician jokes.
Yeah.
I don't know why the drummer was picked to be the butt of every joke.
I do.
Okay.
Because I am the drummer. I know myself pretty well. You know what right. I mean? There's a reason. It takes a certain person to want to kick the absolute living shit out of something for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And then get away with it scot-free.
That's true.
That's a certain person.
That's true.
So, like, when we were doing the bigger gigs, like the headlining shows, where it's an hour long nonstop, and I'm giving it absolutely everything from second one until minute last. You were at the gig in the basement, not the big show one. It was it was a sweaty little horrible basement. There was sweat dripping off the ceiling.
Yes.
Psychedelic band were playing. They had one of those
OHP projectors. Yeah. So that was it was in Soho, and it was glass walls.
Yes.
The whole building was shaped like a flute.
Yes.
And I remember because one of my clients played there called Wiles and Simpson, and it is acoustically the worst design for a room ever.
It just
amplifies bass and nothing else.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember you played there. The sound engineer there was a prick as well.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah.
So that gig,
yep,
I broke my ring finger.
You did. Like, broke a my motherfucker ring
finger at the second knuckle, and it was like off because I'd smacked it against the cymbal, and I'd known something was wrong because my hand was hurting, but I carried on playing.
Yeah.
And then between songs, Dom, the rhythm guitarist, leant over and was like, "Are you okay?" And I showed him my finger, and he yanked it, and it went back to being straight finger. So then I just carried on.
Yeah, yeah.
That stuff happened all the fucking time. Mm. Do you remember when we played the O2 in Kensington? We supported that really big Italian band.
Oh God, yeah.
Like 3,000
yeah.
people, yeah. And it was an insane gig.
Yeah,
like, ridiculous,
great
gig. It's super fun gig, right? That was the first gig that we had a rider.
Yep.
We didn't know what to put on it, so we put two crates of beer and some grapes. Terrible, terrible mixture.
Yeah.
If you're going on stage to play a gig.
Because I bumped
hour.
Into my mate who engineered for Muse in the lobby.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten all of this.
Yeah.
This is new information.
Yeah,
I've just
this
remembered.
Is what I mean.
Yeah.
A great gig. And we had those Itsu dumplings.
Yeah.
From the little shopping center underneath. That was a great time.
Great night.
That was a great night. I broke my thumb that night. That was a great night. I broke my thumb and then immediately went out to my car because I had to leave because I had work at 6 a.m. So at 2 a.m., I'm peeling a ticket off my car because the guy who fucking told us where to unload was like, you're completely fine. Don't worry about it. You can park here. So I put my work van there and I was like, work will never know that I've used the van for a gig. Mm-hmm. And then I get a ticket and it goes, obviously like goes through. You get a letter sent through to the office being sort of like, you need to pay your fine like now. I'm like, yeah, sick. But yeah. I was breaking fingers all the time. It takes a certain person to do it. Do you know what I mean?
I can't remember the band that I was with. Mm-hmm. The guitarist, he was playing. He dropped his pick.
Yeah.
So he started playing with his fingers.
I don't want to know how this story ends.
He took his thumbnail off.
Oh, I already knew where it was going to go. Yeah.
And he literally bent down, picked it up, and just started using it as a plectrum.
You've told me this before.
I can't remember that. It's going to annoy me. It's going
to
annoy me.
I don't want to know, to be fair.
Speaking of things we don't want to know. We have to address the elephant in the room.
Okay.
Rob Reiner, the director of this film, who opens the movie, has this week been murdered by his son.
Rest in peace. Yeah.
I find it insane because when I was researching this movie, I was watching interviews that he was giving.
Yeah.
3 months ago, supporting the sequel to this movie.
Yeah.
There seems to have been a major mental health crisis involving his son.
Yeah.
But what I didn't realize is that his career starts so incredibly strong.
Mm-hmm.
And then around about 1992, falls off a cliff, but he just keeps going.
He was one of these guys that was always a tad too early.
Right.
He was
Spinal
always
tap.
Just before his time. And the fact that he was doing this stuff and then just running with it, regardless of... It's the true artist.
Yeah.
It's leaning in. It's being the unapologetic artist in doing something that you believe in wholeheartedly, regardless.
Of whether people are... He's just in it for the love of the game.
That's exactly what it is.
His filmography, this is his first film.
Yeah.
He then goes on to The Sure Thing, which is, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
John Cusack. Stand By Me.
Yeah.
Then The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Then When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah.
Then Misery. Then A Few Good Men.
Yeah.
Just knocking them out.
Yeah.
And then from 1994 onwards,
mm-hmm.
not much. Really not much. The Bucket List with...
Fucking amazing film.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
Is it not just Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman doing their...
It's one of the sweetest films that you'll ever watch. And if you don't cry at it, you're a fucking monster.
Okay. Well,
it's amazing.
That's firmly me.
It's actually amazing. That's one. Unironically, that'll be, if I'm ever, you know, when you get like so stressed that you're like, I just need to fucking cry it out.
Yeah.
That is one of the films that I'll go to.
Okay.
It fucking breaks me every time.
I might need to add it to the list then.
It's no shit. Great film.
Okay.
Great film.
Okay.
You know where it's going. You know what's happening. But fucking hell, is it a pleasure to watch it happen.
Yeah.
There you go.
Fair. Well, just before we get to our final definitive, some might say controversial rating of this movie,
mm-hmm.
got a little time for Comment Corner?
Sure. Let's hear it.
Shall we dig some out?
We got Adam Brooks.
Yeah. But just in case it doesn't make it into the edit for the intro, do you want to talk about Adam Brooks?
So Adam Brooks, we posted a reel from... about Frankie Frico.
We did, the film we covered last week, tiny budget of like 50 grand Canadian, which is like 28 grand in British money.
Yeah, 100%. He literally just dropped a comment saying, where did you get these numbers? I think you're incorrect.
And that's Adam Brooks, who starred both not only in this film as the boss that everyone should want, but he starred in Psycho Gorman as the dad that everyone
as
should
Greg,
want.
As Greg, yeah.
So he's come by just on a drive-by.
He's in Astron 6. He's him and Kostansky are like BFFs.
Right, he's in
and
the cult.
And Connor Sweeney. They all make the movies together.
And he's told us that your research was wrong.
Yeah.
Right, but then...
I went back to him and he's just ignored me. So I can, essentially, until he corrects me, I'm just going to make up anything. It cost $100 million.
It was the most wasteful film.
Yeah.
For money in
yeah.
versus profit out. They fucked it.
Yeah.
It's a stain on human capitalism.
Balls in your court.
Yeah.
Mr. Adam Brooks.
You offensive, also, money-wasting bastards.
I love you so much. Thank you for your work.
You can get a little bit of glazing in now if you want.
He's fucking amazing. Just go watch Psycho Gorman and tell me you don't want Greg as your dad. Because fucking hell, is he an inspiration to everyone? He's just knocking about, hurting his hand, cooking his family a delicious chicken dinner, and doing fuck all else. But don't you dare call him lazy. Right? Because he is anything but.
We posted a reel about the Tin Men of The Wizard of Oz, talking about how the first one, mm-hmm. Buddy Ebsen, yeah. was in Beverly Hillbillies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody got in touch. And I think they deleted their comment. It's a shame.
Why?
Because it was a very simple typo. And it was regarding Buddy Ebsen, mm-hmm. but auto-corrected to Buddy Epstein Didn't Die.
Incredible.
To which I replied, oh my God, you've uncovered the biggest conspiracy in the world. And they've deleted it. Oh, that's a shame. That is a great shame.
I fucking despise the fact that you can delete your own comments on social media. I think you need to stand by them.
Yo, you just need to be stuck with them forever.
Yeah.
And then there was loads of love for Psycho Gorman.
Everyone loves Psycho Gorman.
Everyone. And Craig Jameson's disappeared.
No, he's back every now and then.
Is he just moonlighting?
He's back every now and then. He's on the night shift at the minute.
Right.
So he's doing his thing.
Well, I did ask people to reply to his comments and get him to listen to the show, but he went missing.
Yeah.
We should try again.
Yeah, we should try again. We have just had a message from Lloyd Kaufman.
What? Lloyd Kaufman of
Troma.
Yeah. Original founder, creator of the Tromaverse.
Yeah,
he just got in touch with us.
Sent us a link to a Troma advent calendar, a Toxmas advent calendar, and just put Merry Toxmas, Uncle Lloyd.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
I love that guy.
What a dude. Oh, well, that was Comment Corner Gang. I think it should be obvious how you can get in touch and have us discuss your ramblings, your thoughts.
Yeah.
Get in touch with us. Let us know. Just find us on social media. We're on Instagram, we're on Facebook.
Yeah.
We're everywhere.
Just get in touch. Next week, it's going to be our Christmas episode. So we're going to be doing something a little different. We're going to do our top 5, 10, yeah. our top films of 2025. We're just going to have a nice, easy, relaxed chat about some films.
Yeah.
Do a little bit of ranking, have some fun. Because essentially what we're going to do is we're actually going to have a break this Christmas. So we're going to record that soon.
Right.
That'll be released over the Christmas period. So you guys still get your gubbins. I've got some stuff filmed for Patreon. It's going to be a little bit of a thing called the VHS Club, where we go into a little bit of the physical media side of stuff. It's not going to be movie reviews. It's going to be some fun little stuff. Look at this version of Die Hard compared to this version of Die Hard.
Nice.
That type stuff.
I'm excited.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's fun. It's fun.
It'd be great.
There's plenty of stuff for you there. We're over on Patreon. We're going to be having a break. Enjoy your Christmas.
Have a lovely
Christmas.
Spend
time with your family. Spend time with your friends. Just fucking enjoy yourself. Take a breather. It's been a weird year. Do you know what I mean?
It's been a weird year.
It's been a weird year. Let's just have a nice one.
Yeah. What are you rating Spinal Tap?
8.
8. I think I'm going to celebrate it as an 8.
Yeah.
It's aged too well, and it's too accurate.
There's a lot of it that's problematic, but it's fine. But that's fine.
It was a different time.
It was a different time.
Different time.
And again, we were raised in a different time. So it's still, the worst thing is sometimes...
Hard ass.
There's a couple, not the hard R's that you're thinking of, dear listener.
There's a couple of them too.
Is there? Yeah. Oh, there is.
Yeah, in the album reviews.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, there's a few hard R's. There's a few both hard R's.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, that's it.
Guys.
That's the end of the show.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. We love you all so much. Thank you so fucking much for hanging out with us. It's been amazing. Have yourself a great Christmas. Enjoy yourselves. Be safe. Get in touch with us on socials. Let us know how it all goes. And we'll see you in the new year. Before the new year?
Before the new year, with Christmas show. We just spoke about it.
Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
11:30, Rob. I'm really tired.
Why are we recording this late?
I don't fucking know.
No.
Avatar weekend.
You're going to sum up the thoughts, themes, and feelings of Spinal Tap
I don't fucking know
into
what to
a
do
Monday
this.
Motivational pep talk.
Hey.
While I just tell people to consume.
I think the main lesson that I took away from Spinal Tap, and one that you should take away too, is that mixing mediums is completely fine. And if anything, should be celebrated more. You can take Mozart and Bach on the piano. You can pop it in a D minor, arguably the saddest chord. You can write the most beautiful, heartbreaking melodies that you can. And then the lyrics are, you know, lick my love pump. You mix it this way, and it's just hit after hit. You just knock it out of the park.
Yeah.
One way or another, you hit everyone. Do you know what I mean? There's someone there for everyone.
Smashed it.
It's all good. That's the way it is. I'm so tired. This is crazy. We've got to record another show. Are you ready for the other show?